we've got Mr. 911 hair care himself, Mr. Donald Trump, in his presidential bid. He's got a rather unique election strategy. He's first getting his name out there in the media by going after the birther bull. Yes, he has taken that dead horse and risen it once again. I can't think of too many better ways to hand Barack Obama a re-election on a platter than to get everybody up in a frenzy by reanimating the birther issue. Creating a stink over a non-issue rather than the open economic theft of trillions, the greatest theft ever in the history of the world, the ongoing wars and the torture. Ignore all those things and get in a hussy about Barack Obama's bastard status and his secret daddy, Frank Marshall Davis. And if you want that story, Mark Rivera's got that story up on Obama the Love Child. You can Bing that. Don't use Google. It might be a good strategy for Trump, who's an attention whore, to get his name in the lights a little bit and pass around by concentrating on the birther issue. And maybe, actually, it'd be good because he'll divide the retards one more split there, but so that some of the birthers will go for Trump and leave Romney and Huckabee and some of these other shills. And maybe the idiots will divide the dumbasses that vote on issues like that between themselves and allow for a better, more real candidate on real issues to rise from the pack. So bravo to Trump for doing that act of stupidity. Not that it's on purpose, but if it works in our favor, all the merrier. Now, Barack Obama ran on change, but all he did was increase all of the worst policies of Bush, from the bailouts to more wars of imperialism. And that should have been no shock, because that's exactly how he voted when he was a senator. But all he had to do was get up there and grin and give you some nice empty-handed slogans saying, "I'm for change. Hope, change, believe. Hope, change, believe." And just let you fill in the blank with whatever is psychologically gratifying as to what you thought the change would be or what you thought you could hope for. He knew the bulk of the public wasn't going to look at his Senate record, and he knew the media wasn't going to make a stink over it. I called the three of them, McCain, Hillary, and Obama, Mikhail Obama, the entire time, because on a blind issue sheet, if you were just looking at the issues and the stances, you couldn't tell the difference between the three of them. You look at the things that have come down on his watch. Airports taking naked pictures of your spouse and groping little kids? Is that really any shock from a big brother government goof who voted to keep the Patriot Act twice? Bombing Africa and the Middle East, is that really a surprise from a guy that has nearly quadrupled the war in Afghanistan and co-sponsored the bill to put sanctions on Iran? He played semantics with Iraq, but he hasn't changed anything there. He said he'd leave immediately. He said that in 2007. "I'll bring my troops home." All he did was change the definition of what counts as a combat troop. He changed the categories around. The same number of troops are still there, plus 51,000 combat troops under the new, more tight definitions. And all he did was move around some mercenary groups, put a little Blackwater out, put a little bit more Triple Canopy in, because that's out of Chicago, where his mob is from. And we're still at war in Iraq, and people are still dying every day. It's a complete waste of money, still torturing people. Doesn't matter. And on the subject of torture, he said he would close Guantanamo Bay. Gitmo is still there and open. He lied, and that should have been very apparent when he, just like McCain, ran to AIPAC the very first day after winning the primaries. Both of them went to AIPAC, the Israeli lobby, not an American lobby. Nothing for U.S. interests. They ran right to AIPAC. Obama the bastard also kept Bush's too big to fail nonsense. You remember the very first bailout was on Bush's watch when he was a lame duck. And why not? And why shouldn't Obama support it? And why would anybody be shocked by Obama keeping the too big to fail nonsense? He kept Bush's head of the Department of Defense, Robert Gates, as well as the head of the Federal Reserve, the Ben Bernanke. And that's because he has no intention and has never had any intention of changing foreign policy or monetary policies. His role is to stand up there and smile, read a prompter now and then, and bamboozle his cult with generic sloganeering, a minority card, and a D next to his name. Anyway, now I'm kicking a dead horse. Barack Obama is a con and a liar, and if you vote for him again, you will get what you deserve. On to another issue. We had Goldstone recanting his report about the Israeli apartheid, and the bombings of Palestinians in Gaza, etc. And there's been some stink about this, but it doesn't matter to me if Goldstone or anyone else says that Israel's an apartheid or not an apartheid. It is an apartheid, not based on authority figures, but based on the conditions there of racial colonization and occupation. They don't even bother trying to hide it. Getting some authoritarian source to admit the obvious and then flip-flop on it doesn't matter to me. There is an occupation, and the source of the conflict is occupation. And it's not up to the occupied to create peace and end violence. The occupation itself is already violence. It's up to the occupiers to end the occupation. You cannot simultaneously occupy people and talk about peace and what they need to do for you. It's like a rapist blaming the victim. Well, if she hadn't have been moving around so much, it wouldn't have had to hit her. Maybe if you hadn't have been raping her, she wouldn't have been trying to fight back. But they'll say, well, it's her fault. She was dressed provocatively and made me rape her. Well, we have the opposite swing issue in France right now. They've banned the burqa. You can't have any sort of mask in France now. What the hell? Why do they care? You know, I think it's wrong to have a law that says you have to dress like a beekeeper, but if someone wants to dress like a ghost from Pac-Man and they're an adult, so be it. Let them do it. It doesn't harm you in any way. It's not for security reasons or anything. This is just some anti-Muslim bull. I think Islam's retarded. I think all religions are retarded. However, I believe in individual freedom, and if you want to dress up like that, or you want to wear hardly anything at all, then so be it. Why should anyone care what someone else puts on or puts in or does with their body? They own their own bodies, and they can dress however the hell they want. There was a story up on Anti-Neocons from Tim, and it's just this Muslim couple went and tried to buy a mattress, and the lady wanted to, you know, lay on one of them or something and check it out, and the store refused to sell her anything. Why? Because of how she was dressed. Apparently, she was wearing too much. They didn't want to sell it to her. I mean, it's crazy. And they try to make a case, well, you know, it's for their humility, kind of like Catholic nuns, you know, the ones that dress like penguins and won't show their ankles or whatever. I mean, is that really that much less asinine? Not really. I mean, there's a little piece of cloth over the mouth. That's the basic difference between a nun and the Muslim lady. However, you know, maybe they wouldn't have sold it to a nun either. I don't know. But these crackheads at a mattress store didn't want to sell somebody a mattress or allow her to, you know, test it because she was dressed like a Muslim. Oh, great idea. If you're so prejudiced and hate Muslims, let's have them dress like everyone else and then you won't be able to tell the difference. It's clothing. Ah, people. I guess one way around it might be for women or whoever to just put on those surgical masks like a lot of people do here in Japan, which is where I'm broadcasting from. In Japan, people wear these masks when they're sick so they don't spread germs to other people. It also lets other people around them know that they are sick. And you might think that this is silly, but if you understand the system of the way a lot of Japanese people have to cram onto trains in the mornings, especially where they actually are packed on there briefly like sardines, it is good to have a mask if you're sick, because you are seriously like pressed up against people, nearly touching them, or sometimes even touching them. I don't like how that is. I don't understand why they don't just add a couple more carts to the train on during those peak hours, but whatever, you know. In Japan, you just, a lot of times, you just gotta live and let live and just say, you know, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. You just can't assume anything. And there's a lot of more pressing issues right now, especially after the incident of the tsunami and the earthquakes and the radiation spilling out of Fukushima, but not only Fukushima, but also in Ibaraki, Tokai, which is south of Fukushima. There have been even more radiation spikes. And recently, all the way on the western side, in the Kansai area, in Fukui, with three different reactors there, there are problems with another fast breeder reactor, and there's radiation spikes over there, which had nothing to do with the tsunami, which is interesting. Because that means either they already had radiation leak problems and it was kept quiet and it was only noticed because everyone's out there doing readings for radiation as a result of the tsunami in Fukushima, and they figured this out on happenstance. Or things were fine until a disaster, and the small quake effects that may have reached there set it off. Because what's something that's interesting to me is that the automated systems that do the cooling and refueling and things like that failed in all of these areas, regardless of the damage done. Now, in Fukushima, that was understandable because of the physical damage from the tsunami. But further south, this is south of Miyagi, and this is south of all those prefectures, down in Ibaraki, the damage wasn't significant at all, and yet they had reactors on the fritz. And the cooling systems didn't kick on despite there being three redundancies. And finally, they got one online and got it cooled off, but they were losing water, which was cooling their spent fuel rods there. This is also a place that makes the yellowcake uranium, which is used in the fast breeders to make even more uranium and plutonium for the MOX facilities. Something interesting is that the PLCs, which is nerd talk for the things that are involved with communicating to the systems for automated functions in the reactors, failed, which is something that the Stuxnet virus specifically attacks. Now, this was a man-made virus by the U.S. and Israel meant to attack Iran's nuclear facilities for nuclear power. However, it's gotten out. Pandora's box is open, and it was discovered in Japan last November and October. Now, why they didn't harden up their systems, I don't know. Maybe they did. This is speculation. But it does fit with some reasonable deduction here. We have all these redundancies on these backup systems. And it's these small things, these automated systems and PLCs that failed. And they went in there manually and fixed it up. But that wasn't possible in the Fukushima situation. And it's because the water levels dropped that the whole disaster has been cascading one thing into the other. Now, that's not to detract blame away from KEPCO or TEPCO or the NHK, which is the state-run media here in Japan, but I just want to put that out there because it is worth further research and it does warrant looking into. Regardless of whether or not it affected Japan, it's nasty enough that this thing was made anyway. It could have caused massive damage in Iran as well. And it is a form of terrorism. Call it cyber terrorism, I guess. No, it's not. It's physical terrorism because of what would happen when it shuts those systems down. They could have their own Chernobyl incident. That's insane. I don't know why people build things like that. And if it does turn out to be the case that the Stuxnet virus did affect Japan, there will be massive repercussions to pay. 13,000 people are dead because of the natural disaster. And that's not bad as far as 9.0 quakes go and tsunamis. I mean, you're talking about in the hundreds of thousands in Chile and Haiti. 600,000 in Chile. So 13,000 is a small number for Japan. Japan also is a bit more industrialized and modernized in the way they construct their buildings and so forth. However, there are another 14,000 people still reported as missing. That's what they're categorized as. I would say it's safe to say those people are dead, because it's been well over a month, and if they haven't made contact with anybody on this small island, it's because they can't, because they are no longer here. Still, even with 28,000 or so, 27,000, not so bad for a quake of that size and a tsunami of that size. There were several aftershocks, dozens actually, that ranged between 5 and 6.0, or a little higher in the 6s, and they didn't do any damage really at all. I think it killed another 14 people, set a building on fire, mild property damage. So the earthquake proofing of the cities has been working. The tsunami defense, however, was abysmal. But it is very, very difficult to stop a tsunami. And they're extremely rare, and it's hard to get people to put the money in to build the seawalls and things that are necessary for such an event, which is probably not going to happen in their lifetime. This one happened to happen. This one was recent. It probably will not happen again for a very long time. So you can see the problem of getting people to invest in these kind of things And it's a general problem with the nuclear technology as well. The safety regulations are shaved because private companies are trying to cut corners and save on money. They're money junkies. There have been so many near misses and scares in the past you probably didn't hear about. I mean, just in 1997 and 1999, as well as the year 2000, they had near catastrophes in Japan with reactors, leaking pipes, uranium particles released in the air, you know, problem after problem. And TEPCO and their insurers, with these Mitsubishi and several European insurance companies, don't publicize this very well, and they did not fix the things that they were supposed to have fixed. And so it's compounding problems. It's no single entity's fault, and a natural disaster, of course, is a natural disaster, but the damage could have been severely limited. I mean, the idea of having six reactors on the coast on the most active plate, and there was already earthquakes in New Zealand and Chile prior to this. They were supposed to be taking some of them offline that month in March and missed it by just a week. But still, housing fuel rods right above the reactors, not so smart, but cost efficient. And that's the conflict, cost efficiency versus safety. Similar incident with BP, although that was man-made. The drilling got deeper, but the safety regulations did not. And there's no oversight, and there's no real consequences of worth after these things happen, because there's this partnership between government and business. Now, I don't want you to take that and say, oh, well, regulations are great, they must always be good. That's not the case. It is foolish to blanketly reject or accept regulations. Some regulations are retarded and foolish and meant to push down the middle ground, the middle businesses and small businesses. It's just they nickel and dime people to death and cover them in all this confusion and pointless regulations and costly regulations to protect the businesses on the top from competition. Some regulations are pseudoscience, they for safety or environmental reasons and things that have nothing to do with any legit concerns about safety of the environment, etc. They are just designed to prevent people from having legitimate business growth. And that's to protect the state-assisted monopolies on the top, who basically go unregulated. And the worst situation of this, of course, was the basic non-regulation from the Security and Exchange Commission, which was reduced down to like one employee, I think, in some respects. And the absolute irresponsibility and unaccountability of our financial institutions, which were trading securities and mortgages like they were commodities or stocks, not insuring them, getting around that with credit default swaps, lying about the credit ratings, packaging together these bogus subprime mortgages with the false credit ratings into these CDOs, and then selling those securities to other investors who they lied to, including other banks. I mean, it's such a mess. Trillions wasted, yet no one went to jail. Madoff, one guy. During the SNL scandal, a lot of people went to jail, but this time, what'd they get? They got billions of dollars in bonuses. And these guys are out there buying hookers and doing drugs and just spending money eating $500 cheeseburgers and things like that. Seriously, they eat cheeseburgers flaked with gold and stuff. It's outright theft. It's right in front of you. I thought there would be an outpouring in the United States of this. There have been riots in Europe and the Middle East, and there have been peaceful protests in the U.S. that wouldn't even get 11 seconds of TV news time. That's it. They've gotten away with it. These robber barons have gotten away with it. Obama and Bush, they both had bailouts. Obama voted for Bush's bailout when he was a senator. And as he became president, when the lame duck was out, he just continued the process. And continued the rhetoric of too big to fail, which was BS. And people need to understand that they've been robbed. And all these homes that are being foreclosed on, you can't blame it all on the Trump suckered in by the bank with a no doc loans and the subprime weenies, you know, who get all this blame for saying, well, they're so greedy, they live in a big house, they couldn't afford, that was stupid. Yeah, it was. But there's also responsibility on the part of the banks
doing the lending, to not do that because of, well, look at the results. However, they had no accountability because they didn't worry. They had no risk about making the bad loans because they just sold them off. It was, you know, past the crap that Jack built on, you know, Peter told Paul kind of thing. They sold them to the financials who did all that lying and scandalous packaging and sold them around and made bets on them and gambled on them. When they lost, they got bailed out anyway. There has to be accountability and risk. The old system was fine. The bank made a loan to a person. The person took 20 to 30 years to pay it back. There was a lot of risk. It took a long time, and that was that. But when the bank can pass the loan off to a third party, then they have no incentive not to make bad loans, because their incentive economically then is just make as many loans as possible. Who cares whether or not they are paid back or not, because it's not your debt anymore. They sold it to someone else. And that was the incentive to go out and create as much subprime BS as they could. And the investment banks that are buying this crap didn't care, because they were just going to lie about it and sell it again to a fourth party. And on and on. The point is, the regulation was nowhere. They allowed the fractional reserve ratio to go up to 30 to 1, in some cases to 300 to 1, I mean, basically non-existent. And, you know, with even 3% loss in capital, they wouldn't be able to repay anything, but they didn't care because they knew the whole time the government had their back. And where'd the government get the money? They just borrowed it from the Federal Reserve, or they asked the Chinese or somebody to purchase more debt. And they literally went to the U.S. Mint and just printed what they needed. They don't care about you. And they weren't too big to fail. It's just a bunch of crooks. It's like the mafia.
And all these executive officers and bigwigs in the banks could care less if their company went under or not. They personally profited. They would drive their company into the ground for short-term personal gains. But they ended up getting both. They got the personal gains, and then their companies got bailed out by the government anyway. Except for a selected few. Some were allowed to fail, and others floundered and were bought up by bigger entities. Such as Countrywide was floundering. They were one of the worst ones. But they got bailed out. However, first they were bought up by Bank of America, who didn't get a bailout, not openly, but we found out later from the partial audit and the Fed that they indeed received hundreds of billions of dollars from the Federal Reserve. Actually, a portion of the trillion that was spread around not only to Bank of America, but to European banks as well. This is straight up fiat currency, by the way. But then Bank of America benefits from Countrywide's bailouts since they acquired Countrywide. It's the big banks buying up the smaller ones and buying up the smaller financials and so on. And they're doing it with money they secretly received from the Federal Reserve. And then, on top of all that, they got TARP money as well. $30 billion for Bank of America and exactly $30 billion spread around in bonuses. Billion with a B. You don't give a damn. If you have an account with Bank of America, pay all the checks that are outstanding right now for whatever bills you have, make sure you have enough to pay them, and then close your account and join up with any other bank. I know they're all bad, but Bank of America is the worst.
They just use the government like it's a giant ATM machine. Only the withdrawals aren't from their own accounts, they come from other people's accounts. They have a right to steal.
You know, separating economics from foreign policy is foolish. Wars are still the most expensive thing in the world. And there is no incentive for the military-industrial complex to be cost-efficient. It's quite the opposite, really. They pile on the pork and then get no-bid contracts from their cohorts in the revolving door at the Pentagon. And it baffles me. We've got all these T-tards in the TV hijacked Tea Party. That's to say, the current Tea Party as it is advertised, not the original one that got co-opted. But we got all these T-tards and they're so angry about rising oil prices, and yet they don't oppose these wars. And the press is repeating this nonsense from the ilk of the Keynesian types, the Ben Bernanke types, saying that oil prices are up because of increased demand. And that's the only reason. They ignore the fact of the falling dollar. The falling dollar explains why gas and food prices are rising. And this was predicted. It was predictable and it was done. It was done by Ron Paul, by Jim Rogers, by Peter Schiff, by any real economist, any Austrian economics person could have told you this long before it happened. And they did. But you won't see them being asked what's up on TV. They keep going back to the people who get everything wrong and asking for their opinions again. And if you watch the squawking ninnies on CNBC, they just sit there and make one excuse after another and gang up on any guest they have. It's like 6-1 and it's a screaming contest. It's pretty ridiculous. But not on this radio show. I'm going to give it to you straight. The dollar is free-falling not only from the Fed's fat cats facilitating phony fiat money to finance gamblers engaged in fraud, but also for the fear-mongering fanatics engaged in murderous fascism, which is based on feeble fabrications. You could say they're effing you. But war makes debt, and war generates money for the largest corporate conglomerate on Earth, and that is the military. And just how are these wars going? Well, not very well, depending on your perspective. If you're naive enough to assume that the aim of these wars are to win them, then they're going terribly. Winning's not even defined. It's just abstract. They didn't even let you know what winning would look like if it were achieved. Because that's not the goal. Look at the embarrassing jail break-in slash breakout in Afghanistan we just had recently. It had over 500 Taliban prisoners escaped from prison through a tunnel with full cooperation of the people in the town adjacent to it. That's pretty sad after Obama just tripled the number of troops in Afghanistan and he loses a jail full of Taliban. And the Taliban is enemy number uno since Al-Qaeda doesn't exist. Well, not as anything more than intelligence agencies rent-a-terrorist. I call them modern privateers. But if you look at these wars for what they really are, rather than what they pretend to be, then things are going exactly as planned. The purpose of protracted war is to prolong conflict to procure profits. And PNAC openly stated this desire, as did their promogen, Odin Yinan, who predated even Iran-Contra. And if you don't know who that is, I'm not surprised, because he's a real person, not some vague Illuminati. And he has real, readable documentation, which happened, unlike the kooks playing Degrees of Kevin Bacon to Rothschilds, or getting all caught up in ancient symbolism. Here's an idea. Follow the money and the lies and see where it originates. And truth be told, it goes back to Odin Yinan and the PNAC cabal, and this is very easy to document and has been done. See my film, War by Deception, or read the paper, Iraq 9/11 PNAC, Where Do All the Roads Lead. But written in plain black and white, they state that perpetual low-level combat justifies a U.S. presence, and that presence protects the pipelines and the poppies, and it positions the U.S. to use predator drones in Pakistan and have an Eastern Front potentially for Iran, the main prize. That's Israel's ultimate prize. You can look at the strange situation in Syria. Several snipers shot civilians at a funeral service. Stop for a second and think about this. There's an Arab Spring. Regime changes in the air. Huge revolution, a legitimate one, in Egypt. The U.S. has invaded Libya along with the colonial powers of Europe. There's been a target on your back for decades. You're at a funeral for dead protesters. What's the best way to calm things down and prevent escalation? I know. Let's get some snipers to shoot at civilians in a funeral. That won't make the papers. That won't make the situation worse. What kind of idiots would do that? Sniping protesters at a funeral reminds me of babies yanked from incubators, or the old Hamas had a stabbing of settlers, who I like to call racial colonists. which actually ended up being an Asian worker for the family of racial colonists who got stabbed, or that they shot a school bus. That's perfect right there. Shooting a school bus, that ranks right up there with babies on incubators or sniping people at a funeral. There is no incentive or motive to do this, not even for the Baathist, which would be the primary party that could even pull something like that off in Syria. They're the ruling party, and right after this event, 233 Baathists resigned in protest themselves of the government's action and of even just going in with tanks to combat with these protesters to begin with. So they are protesting themselves, making themselves also protesters. That aligns them with the other protesters. They don't like this reaction, but who would gain from sniping people at a funeral? Probably the same people that lied about shooting a school bus. And if you're really dense and you don't know what I'm talking about, Bing or Yahoo up A Clean Break, Strategies for Securing the Realm, and read that. But the U.S. is in full-blown panic mode with the Egyptian Revolution. We've got the border reopening to Gaza, and we have the Suez Canal now open to ships from Iran for the first time since 1979. And by the way, on the topic of Gaza, I want to mention, this is from Ken O'Keefe and others, they are right now, we are in the process of organizing another flotilla, which is potentially aimed to land in Israel on May 31st, the anniversary of the more infamous flotilla that was shot up where an American was killed, another American was blinded, and eight other people were also killed. I believe all eight of them were Turks. But there are these international flotilla trying to bring aid to Gaza Strip, which is essentially an outdoor prison, and of course the Israelis wouldn't allow it. So now the next flotilla is double the size of the first one, and they'll see how they're going to react. This time they won't be able to block it from Egypt, so if the flotilla is turned around, they can simply go down to Egypt and walk things across the border. Now it's not that easy, the border still has limitations, but they have been getting some aid into Gaza, finally, through Egypt. So, what does the U.S. do? They're positioned right next door in Libya. Maybe we need to reduce the intellectual arguments down to just sloganeering, because that's all that the Republicrats seem to be able to handle. So here's my slogan for you. This is for the situation in Libya, because I'm disgusted. We just bombed from the air and killed Gaddafi's son and three of his grandchildren. And I'll tell you this, as much as I hate Obama or Bush, either one, if somebody invaded the United States and murdered their children and their grandchildren, I would be furious. This isn't the sins of the father kind of thing. And these two guys are psychopaths. George Bush and Barack Obama totally support apartheid. They've started ongoing wars. They are responsible for the death of over a million people, depleted uranium on children, etc. But their grandchildren haven't done a thing. And their children, brainwashed as they are, haven't done anything remotely like their parents. And killing Gaddafi's grandchildren and his son is disgusting. So here's my slogan for you. This is for the French and the British as well. Bombing people is not humanitarian. And you do not save people by murdering them yourself. The coalition also bombed a school for disabled children. That's some precision bombing there. I like how they name things surgical strike or pinpoint attacks or precision bombs. They're anything but that. A bomb is exactly what it sounds like. And it just takes out everything around it in the general vicinity. Now, Libya is a longer story, and I know people have said it's for oil, and that's a pretty simple reason just to say about any war in the Middle East. But that is not why we are in Libya, and I think I'm going to run out of time before I can really break down that situation. I don't want to just have hyperbole on this. This is very serious business, so you can go to anti-neocons and read about it, or you can wait for the next radio show. I'm going to devote a lot more time to Libya. so we'll get into that. Now I want to talk about this trip to Gaza. This flotilla needs press. There needs to be a lot of press before it reaches Israel, and then as it gets there when the you-know-what hits the fan, because everyone knows the Israelis are not going to act rationally. They are going to lash out, because that's all they know how to do. Last time they sent commandos out in the middle of the night and started shooting people on the boat, arrested everybody, tried to confiscate their film, faked footage themselves, which was hilarious because you can see them like actually walking through the props where they had it on a green screen. It was fabulously terrible. But it really didn't make the press how they tried to fake their own footage. YouTube, of course, being the way it is, censored the hell out of it, but they couldn't stop it all from leaking. So this time is twice the size. It needs media. That's the main thing. If people going, if you're going, got to bring your camera, stick your SD card in your mouth or whatever when they come. Hopefully it won't get violent like last time, but I wouldn't hold my breath on that. If you can donate supplies, if you have, you know, if you don't have any money, whatever, don't guilt yourself. But if you have the means and you can donate some crayons or money or some, you know, food like rice and something like that, then you should do it because this is historic and you should be part of it. Now, I know I don't have a good segue for this, but I need to talk about something going on right now in North Carolina, and it's a national issue. They've closed down large portions of the beach on an island, on Cape Hatteras Island, as well as Ocracoke Island. Closing beaches on islands has a fairly predictable consequence. You are raping the economy and destroying the people who live there, livelihoods, as well as vacation spots for millions of visitors. Now the reason for this, the pretext for this, is this bird called the piping plover. It's not an endangered species, and it's not in any danger from people being on the beach. People have been visiting these beaches since before America was even America. It's actually where the very first original colony came. People and the Indians were there before that. These birds are not in trouble. A judge, Judge Boyle, the guy defending Blackwater, who countersued the families with Fred Felding, you know, the 9/11 commission guy, who countersued the families who were trying to get information about the four contractors, aka mercenaries from Blackwater, hung from a bridge in Fallujah, to shut them up so that they could not figure out the circumstances surrounding their death. But if you want to know the circumstances, read Jeremy Scahill's book, Blackwater, because he goes into it. But this judge, he's a total neocon, Terrence Boyle, he gets in his king crown out and puts it on his head with these pseudo-environmental groups like the Audubon Society, whose founder was a bird-murdering artiste and a draft dodger. Killed all these thousands of birds, and he arranged their dead bodies in certain ways so that he could paint them and draw them. But anyway, it's funny that they have the bird-loving group based on a man that murdered all these birds. But what they do is they go in with whatever pretext they can to basically grab real estate, which, you know, for under the guise of making a bird sanctuary, whatever. And then years later, they turn around and they sell it to developers to build condos, which is exactly what they did north of the beach up in Duck in North Carolina. $25 million they made. Well, they're doing the same kind of scam. They've closed down the park, supposedly for a bird. They are ruining this island. I'm from this island. I am very passionate about this issue. But it's also happened in New Jersey, and it's happened in Michigan, and it's happening in California. And it's all piping plover this, piping plover that. This judge used a decree to shut down the beach. A judicial decree. This isn't a law. The beach was created, the park was created by a congressional law. So it can only be overturned by a law. But he's using an executive order, which also cannot overturn laws, but he's using an executive order from President Nixon, no less, to create a judicial decree, which just overturns the law that Congress made and the promise that the park would always be open. You know, and all the businesses down there grew up with this park being adjacent to them, and they are completely dependent on the tourism for these beaches. When you shut down the beach, they've lost millions. And there are people who are completely out of business. There are a lot of people who've had to leave the island, myself included, because there was no economy. It's bad enough. There's a nationwide recession. I'll call it a depression. There's a depression in America right now. And overlapping with that, they've shut down beaches on an island and have proclaimed straight out of their rear ends that there hasn't been any economic impact. They didn't even do an economic impact study. But one doesn't really need to be done because you can see the businesses that have been open for generations that are now either shut down or running on minimal employment. This isn't the birds' fault. It's this pseudo-environmentalism. And this is the Agenda 21. It's happening. It's happening now. And we have a bill in Congress to overturn this. It basically just restates the original Enabling Act that Congress already passed to create the park to undo all this mess. And on top of all this, we've got the Park Service doing exactly what they did out in Yellowstone, where they went, and predator control and killed all the wolves, and then they started killing the cougars, and then they had to kill elk, and they kill the next animal, because they're messing up this fragile food chain. And they just murdered a bunch of animals, and they don't care. They get paid more to police the area than they do to protect it, and they're out there posing with the carcasses and things. But over in North Carolina, they're shooting all the possum and the raccoons and the geese and even ghost crabs that might get a bird egg, and they're trapping them and gassing them, and they've killed feral cats and dogs and even a coyote. And all the fox, the red fox and gray fox, are probably gone from the island. Now they are a rare and indigenous. All for 10 nesting pairs of birds. And to make matters worse, since this has been going on since 2007, they shut down the beach all summer long, except for part of August. The bird populations have declined. And that's because the presence of people in the park are what protected the birds from predators. Now they've been removed, the predators are being killed, we got all these thousands of animals being murdered by the Park Service, the bird population's in decline, and the economy of the island is essentially non-existent, and people are becoming homeless. We've got to get this bill passed, not only for the sake of North Carolina and the residents of these islands and their visitors who enjoy the recreation there. It's a very historical part of America. It's the principle of it. We have to prevent it here to prevent it in other areas. And these pseudo-environmental groups, the same as the global warming kooks and all that, they are enjoying a lot of power right now. And we've had some legitimate environmental disasters with BP, which was man-made, and here where I am right now in Japan from the tsunami and the earthquakes. In combination with the radiation from the reactors. And what that does is it allows the pseudo-environmental groups to latch onto that to gain more money and supporters. But what they do with that money isn't always to protect animals or anything. Just like the televangelists up there on TV who collect all this money from Christians who probably have good intentions, but have no idea that their money is being used to buy equipment for diamond mining for Pat Robertson and his personal profits in his mansion, etc. They're not spending the money on the poor. They're just enriching themselves. And that's what these environmental groups do. They have a clever pretext. They have a legitimate real issue. I mean, protecting animals is fine, but that's not what they're doing, and that's not what they really care about. They are just destroying people's lives and murdering animals. And the birding questions population is down because they had nothing stronger than a correlation study to say that people being on the beach at the same time as the bird had anything to do with its nesting patterns. It's, storms are the main factor there, and its population has sat between 8 and 10 pairs of birds. Seriously, these aren't hundreds or anything. This is like 8 to 10 pairs of birds since the 1960s. Okay? And people have been on the beach the whole time. It's insane, and it's not just about the pseudo-environmental groups. It's the abuse of power of executive orders or judicial decrees. The president is not a king, and judges are not kings. The reason Congress makes laws is because Congress can be held responsible for their decisions. They are elected representatives, so at least somewhat have to get votes in their region, whether they lobby for them, manipulate them with media, whatever. It's still better than a federal judge who gets appointed. And when they make bad decisions, they can be voted out. But you can't vote out a federal judge. He has no consequence. So when they're just throwing around decrees, you know, it was bad enough, I forget the number, but Bush, I believe, had a record of number of executive orders, which he thought were laws. And Obama's done the same thing. You can remember back during the abortion debate, healthcare debate, he tried to say he just put an executive order in there to fix the problem with abortion, where, you know, people who legitimately, you know, are pro-life and they have a problem, a conscientious problem with that having their money being used to pay for abortions. Now, I'm a pro-choice guy, but I understand that's legit beef. I don't think people should have to, I don't agree with the whole process anyway, but those people shouldn't have their money being used for something that they have a conscientious objection to. But Obama is so retarded that he didn't understand the difference between a line item veto, which is what he would really have to use for that case to cut something out of a bill, and an executive order. This is the President of the United States, and he didn't even know how an executive order works. Why? Because he's a moron. He thought there were 57 states. His role is just get up there and smile and read a teleprompter. He is elected because he had a D next to his name and he had a minority card. And that is why he's there. He is George Bush's third term. His race is irrelevant. Who his daddy was is irrelevant. It's what he's doing that is relevant. Vote for the person based on their ideologies and actions. You don't vote on the man because of demographics or because of the party label. It is so dumb. And that is exactly what's wrong with this country. We need to overturn this judge's decree by gaining support in the Congress. And there's a Senate bill and there's a House bill. The Senate bill is 1557. It's been killed in committee. There are enough votes to pass it, but Richard Burr from North Carolina isn't the brightest crayon in the box either. Neither is Walter Jones. He's the guy that wanted to rename French fries to Freedom Fries. But he is doing his best, and he has co-sponsored a bill, and Ron Paul's signed it, and even some Democrats have signed it to reopen these beaches. But there's always something more pressing ahead, you know, we're bombing another country, or there's the Health Care Act, or something huge in the way. But for the people living there and the people who visit there, this is vitally important. And as Americans, we need to bond together on local issues. And if you've got some beef and you want me to bring it up on the radio show and you can explain the case to me, I will give you a voice. I want to close my show with today's 2 cents. It's something I do every week on Rice 2 cents anyway. I'll give you 5 of them. These are just little tidbits, food for thought, if you will. Number 1, and this is a very appropriate for this week's news. Royals. The royal family. I can't believe the concept even still exists. You deserve to be peasants. 2. Remember a long time ago when men actually acted like males? Sigh. What happened? 3. How come truth sites leaking real information for decades are busting butt to make ends meet, but someone like Julian Assange comes along stating no crap Sherlock information and gossip, and he gets hundreds of thousands of dollars from secret backers? This is somebody who was promoted by Time magazine before he had even leaked anything. And the things he had leaked had already been leaked. I'd seen them. I'd seen plenty of people being killed in Iraq. Oh, wow, the U.S. kills civilians in Iraq? You don't say. Is that actually new information? Anyway, 4. 4. Why are prescription drugs advertised on television? You either need them or you don't, and it's a doctor's decision to decide if you need a particular drug based on your symptoms, not you. They shouldn't be advertising prescription drugs on television. 5. With triple wars, torture, airport rape, and Wall Street theft, does anyone else think Obama is praying for a distraction issue like the birth certificates nonsense or the he's a secret Muslim junk? And that's my 2 cents for today. And that's all my time today. Thank you to Liberty News Radio for allowing me to have a show, and thank you to everyone who's listening. And come over to Rise 2 Cents and check us out. Thanks for being with me today. Hello, you're listening to Rye on the Radio. Please subscribe to the podcast. I'm going to be bashing Israel today and deconstructing the Zionist power in America. Bibi, Benjamin Netanyahu, gave a speech slash show of control recently. Benjamin Netanyahu is, of course, the only Israeli prime minister that was ever actually born in Israel, since Israel didn't exist until 1947, other than in fictional stories. But old Yahoo went to the Imperial Senate and gave a speech to the Congress critters, his little minions, about Israel and how occupation and apartheid will continue, and how the U.S. is going to continue to pay for it with a smile. The leader of the openly fascist police state received no less than 56 standing ovations. 56 times they stood up and applauded this fascist lunatic. That is the U.S. Congress cheering for a terrorist. Why 56 standing ovations? Did he capture Osama bin Laden with his bare hands? Sounds ridiculous enough, but hell, why not change that story for a 12th time? Did he arrest the crooks on Wall Street who stole hundreds of billions of dollars from regular Americans? No. He didn't do anything for America. And Israel does nothing for America aside give demands. The Congress critters were clapping to show support for Israel's ethnic cleansing, forced segregation of their schools and highways, and a policy of home demolition, and the U.S.'s subsidized racial colonization. Racial colonization, that's what it is. One would think the U.S. may have been done with that after slaughtering tens of millions of American Indians. Apparently, they just found a new area to declare manifest destiny. How the insane notion of "that's my land because I said that God said so" persists today is beyond me. Israel. Israel, that worthless leech of a nation, is entirely dependent on the U.S. militarily and economically. And yet it's Israel issuing the demands. The U.S. is presently still occupying Iraq and went to war in Iraq based on Israeli deceptions and lies and Israeli interest. This is a nation, despite massive technological advantages, which could not even take care of Hezbollah. The Israelis don't know how to fight anybody who can actually fire back. They are too busy learning how to shoot children throwing rocks. They didn't know what to do when someone had even a 1% chance of shooting back at them. They were utterly embarrassed, and the myth of Israeli might went down in flames as they got a nice spanking by Hezbollah when the U.S. wouldn't run and save them. They are completely dependent on the U.S.'s support to defend their racial colonization and ethnic cleansing. They are completely dependent on the U.S. to subsidize their economy over $10 million a day, even when American roads are falling apart and American schools are falling apart. We're sending billions of dollars to Israel to pay for schools where Arabs and Jews can't even go to the same high school. They cannot even drive on the same roads in the occupied territories. They have color-coded license plates, one for the chosen race of God and one for everyone else. That is what we are paying for. How does this happen? What possible leverage does Israel have over America when Israel is completely dependent on the United States for everything, not only for the military and for economics? Every time a UN resolution comes down the pipe condemning Israel's open fascism, it's the United States that uses its veto power to shoot it down, often solo, voting one, getting votes that are 130 to 1. It's certainly not the Jewish demographic in the United States, which is barely even 2%, if that. And politicians shouldn't even be basing their votes on demographics to begin with, but we all know they do. They chase around pollsters like Kingyo no Fun, as they'd say in Japan. It's a saying that means, if you've ever seen a fish poop, it doesn't always come out all the way, and as the fish swims around, the little ball of poop just follows it, firmly attached to the butthole. That is how our Congress critters are. They base their votes on statistics rather than principles, because they don't have any principles. Well, they have one. They are there to act as a conduit between big business and government, where they freely allocate our money to plutocrats. That is their sole role. They are there totally at the behest of special interests and lobbyists, with the exceptions of a few, like the Pauls. They don't have any principles or philosophy. They're just there, waffling around, looking at polls to tell them what to say in order to pander to the majority or the lowest common denominator. And when that doesn't work, they simply lie. But this is a vital point. You cannot equate Jews with Israel. The 2% little minority of Jews in the United States is basically insignificant. And yet there is a massively lopsided, disproportionate level of power for Zionist interest in the United States, not only in politics, but in the media as well. But you cannot equate that to the Jews. That's what Israel does. Israel equates itself to Jews. Israel is not the Jews. Israel is a nation. Jewish people are an ethnicity and sometimes a religion. They ought to have two terms. Israel defends itself by saying anytime you condemn the actions of the Israeli state that you're just against Jewish people in general, an anti-Semite or a bigot. That's a Zionist lie, and Zionism is a political ideology mashed in with a racist version of a religion. The same as Holy Roller Christians in the past have also adopted a racist ideology that does not pan into Christianity in general. I, for one, think all religions are insane, childish superstitions. I'm just explaining. The reason for such Israeli power in the United States has nothing to do with the number of Jews living in the United States. It wouldn't matter if there was 2%, 20%, or 100%. Israel would still have all the influence it wanted. And the reason is five letters long. AIPAC, AIPAC, the most powerful lobby in Washington. It's an Israeli lobby. It's in the name. That's what the I stands for. And yet, it tries to pass itself off as a Jewish lobby. Why? Because then they're not subject to the Foreign Registration Act. AIPAC is an unregistered foreign lobby. All the other countries are correctly registered as foreign agents, and they are not allowed to contribute to campaigns of the Congress critters. But AIPAC, it used to be called the American Zionist Council. The Kennedys were forcing them to register, so they simply changed their name. And when that didn't work, both Kennedys ended up shot in the head, with Robert Kennedy's death being blamed on a Palestinian gunman, no less. I'm not going to get into that can of worms. The point is, this is how it works. AIPAC lobbies the Congress to give away your money to Israel. Billions of it. Much of that money is earmarked to be recycled on the military-industrial complex, which is a way of saying, look, After you appropriate this money, it's going to be allocated to specific industries that are going to be used in Israel, but are multinational, and go right back to the U.S.'s own corporatocracy. That's the way of paying them off. But the rest of the money they use for their apartheid wall and their ethnic cleansing and their 60% security state. But there are still millions left to be pushed back to the United States to use in campaign financing to gain more influence over more Congress critters who they can use to then spend billions again back to Israel. And then they use millions of it once again to buy more influence in politics and in the press. And if you criticize any step of this entire process, then you're the one that's racist. You're anti-Semitic. You hate Jewish people. It has nothing to do with Jewish people, much less Jewish Americans. Israel doesn't give a damn about Jewish Americans other than how they can sucker them into giving them money. The same with Christian Zionists. They don't care what happens in America. They don't care what happens to people in Israel. All they care about is feeding their own military-industrial complex and this insane ideology dating back to the Torah as well as biblical insanity that this land was given to them by God. They actually thrive on the bigotry and the machoism of racism. My tribe's bigger than yours, but a dang. AIPAC doesn't always buy influence in the media. Sometimes it is the media. The most prominent anchor on CNN for a long time was Wolf Blitzer, who's a quote-unquote former employee of AIPAC. The man is a Zionist racist scumbag. He equates Israel with the Jews, and he himself is Jewish, so of course he passionately supports everything and anything that Israel does, even poisoning babies with depleted uranium. It all doesn't matter, because in his mind, in his worldview, it's us and them, the Jews and Gentiles. The entire world, this is so unhealthy, but this is how it is. The entire world is divided into those two categories, Jews and non-Jews. This is for our Zionists. Well, many Christians believe this as well, but for this guy, that's how the world works. And everyone's ganging up on Israel. It couldn't possibly be because of the house demolitions or the slaughter or the occupation. That's all missing from the context. All of that's defense. It's like a rapist blaming the victim and saying, well, she struggled too much, so I had to lay a few punches on her. She hadn't struggled, I wouldn't have done that. The entire context of the rape is missing. And I seriously doubt you could go to a court of law, even in Israel, and say, God gave me that vagina. It doesn't matter that it's her vagina, clearly. God said it's mine, so I can rape it. I was just defending myself from her struggling against me raping her. That's the kind of twisted logic of the Zionist. It's just the U.S. right or wrong, Israel right or wrong, we are automatically right no matter what. Start with the conclusion and work backwards. That is how insane these people actually are. And in our society, in our culture, as Ralph Nader so elegantly pointed out, if you want to get a rise out of people, especially young people, pointless slaughter and stealing from the poor, and you can just list that, it just like goes in one ear and out the other. But if you want to really push someone's button, you give a racial slur, ethnic slur, or gender slur. That'll drive people up the wall. I'm paraphrasing Nader. And it's true. That's some of the most powerful weapons there are. If you get accused of being racist, or being a bigot, or being sexist, you are done. But if you actually are a racist, as the Zionist policy is, and its bigotry as well, if you actually are not only believing in a superior race, but acting on it and actively murdering other people, wholesale ethnic cleansing and murder. Murder. This is real. This is happening today. This is ongoing. They are murdering these people, burning down their farms, chopping down their trees, smashing their houses, shooting at them, starving them. It's utter, desolate, prison-style conditions in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. And this is happening. But oh no, it's not on TV. So it's out of sight, out of mind. And we've all been conditioned so strongly by World War II and the Holocaust that no matter what anybody does to anybody, it's got to be compared to that, and the Jews are the winner. And again, it's not the Jews. I don't believe in things this way. I'm saying how other people think. They are collectivist. They group Israel in like that with the general Jewish suffering in all of history. And thus, if you say something against what Israel's doing, because they equate that to the Jews, and they equate the Jews to all suffering that's ever happened to any Jewish person in the world in history, then you must be hating Jews when you point out that there's a group A is killing group B, and group B has really no means to protect itself. If it was anyone else, if there was anyone else being ethnically cleansed in such a manner, could they get away with it? Yes, they could. The Turks ethnically cleansed the Kurds. I'm not going to get a list in it actually now into all the types of ethnic cleansing around the world, but the U.S. has been supporting it. And the reason I'm not going to list it is because if I leave one out, everyone will jump on me and say, what about the da 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 da? You know, okay, the Armenians, the Greeks, I don't have time. Okay, mainly native peoples and the people in the third world have gotten it the worst. It's not a pissing contest. It's not a pecking order of, you know, who had more die or anything, okay? Don't turn it into that. Don't debase the suffering like that by giving it some sort of ranking system, okay? People die. People have been starved to death. People have been enslaved. People have been put in labor camps. People have had biological warfare spread on them. It's disgusting what people have done to other people. We're talking about Palestine right now because the people getting a standing ovation 56 times in the U.S. Congress is Benjamin Netanyahu and his Zionist philosophy, which is actually mild compared to Lieberman, an Israeli settler who doesn't even believe Palestinians exist. He thinks they're all Jordanians. Well, even if they were Jordanians, is it not wrong to kill Jordanians? What the hell? You can't just shoot little kids. And as for World War II and the Holocaust, I pluralize it. I don't want to open that can of worms either because I don't have enough time, but go see the film More Than Taboo. It's on Vimeo because they wouldn't allow it on YouTube. And look at that. And look at some of the exaggerations and omissions. You rarely hear about the millions starved to death in Bengal. You rarely hear about the 10 to 15 million people who died in the Congo just before the war. You don't hear about those genocides because the Allies did those genocides. And history is told by the winners. If you want to talk to your friends or your peers, maybe they're holy rollers, maybe they're neocons, maybe they're delusional leftists that think every time we murder somebody it's for greater humanitarian purposes or whatever, and you can't appeal to them morally, try appealing to them financially, because the United States cannot afford to be giving foreign aid to anybody right now or getting drug into any more military conflicts, although it's going to be. It wants to be. The interests of the people who live in America are not at heart. The people that actually run our government, the plutocratic system, is all about personal profit. And the government is just a medium to funnel money into select industries, the largest of which is warfare. And that is also financed by central banks, with the government giving them the IOU using the tax system as collateral. And when that runs out, they'll just start seizing assets, which is already happening in a long, colluded way. It's embarrassing how much our Constitution is flagrantly ignored. We've got the TSA fondling little kids. It's corporate voyeurism and molestation at the airport. They confiscate people's drinks, their caviar. Someone just wrote me on YouTube. Stole a person's caviar. Why? Because it's wet. Oh, must be a security risk. They've de-pantsed babies. The police. Every day I read some horror story about these government thugs shooting a teenager, killing a little girl while she was sleeping, beating people to death, robbing people, taking drug money for themselves, selling drugs. If you don't think the war on drugs needs to end, let me tell you something. As someone who, as a child, I supported the war on drugs. And I'm very much personally against drugs. I don't use drugs. I don't want them. But I support an end to the war on drugs. Because I choose that I don't want to do drugs. But I also have a philosophy of liberty. And you own your own body. And what you put in it is up to you. That's your business. And I don't like the money laundering from the war on drugs used for the CIA and the continuity of government and a slew of other thugs that sell and control 90% of the heroin trade to fund black operations. And I'm not real big on heroin. I don't want people exaggerating this whole talk like they did to Ron Paul and say, oh, I just said they should legalize heroin. My only thing with heroin, I don't think anybody should ever do heroin. I can't see any positive effects from heroin. The main beef I have with heroin is that the money generated by it being illegal, where people can't go and get help as they could if it was legal, is used for some of the nastiest stuff in the world. The CIA uses the drug money. We've been having opium wars for centuries. We're still using drug money out of Afghanistan right now. That is financing the secret prison system, which Abu Ghraib was just the tip of the iceberg there, I assure you. There's still a rendition program. The CIA is nasty. You're full of torture, human trafficking, and drug smuggling. And they use that money also in bribing and blackmailing people for political secrets. We're talking about nuclear technology, illegal weapons trades, all of it. It's all tied together, and the backbone of it is the war on drugs. That finances the entire prison system. It's a business. Prisons are a business. It's not just there to, you know, keep bad people off the street and protect people. They're businesses, and they act as umbrellas for other businesses. There are prisons that are full of all these television sets and weights and things that no one's allowed to use or watch. They just have them for the sake of it, because that was another contract that they could attach to the system at large. My bigger beef on the war on drugs is with marijuana. I have never used marijuana. Don't want it. Don't like it. I hate all the exaggerations about it. People saying it can cure cancer, make you fly, whatever. I think it's all retarded. But I think marijuana should be legal. Or at minimal, decriminalized. Medical marijuana should definitely be legal. And hemp, which has nothing to do with it, industrial hemp, I don't see any argument, legitimate argument, against industrial hemp. The only reason it's illegal is because it's associated with marijuana, which are very weak arguments against marijuana. It's a recreational drug. I know so many people that use it. It seems to make them happy. They enjoy it. I don't know why it's illegal. And even if it is going to be illegal, there is no way someone should go to prison for smoking marijuana or selling marijuana. It just isn't that harmful to society. But they use that. First of all, so many people wouldn't be using drugs if our society didn't have the screwed up environmental conditions, the psychological conditions that drive people towards that. That's another issue. Another big factor is Big Pharma is scared to death of something possibly working a little bit better than their quacky psychotropic drugs, which have been associated to suicides and homicides, unlike marijuana, which you may be able to accuse of somebody giggling and eating too many potato chips.
It's not a violent drug. What makes it violent is people shooting each other and robbing each other over the profits that it generates and how it links to other drugs. Prohibition doesn't work. It didn't work for alcohol in the United States. It didn't work when the Russians did it either. In both cases, it just led to a massive black market and the growth of organized crime like it had never grown before. That is more than gambling, more than prostitution, more than any other common source of revenue for the mafias. Drugs were number one. And the prohibition of alcohol was numero uno, because a lot of people drink. But if alcohol is going to be legal, and it should be, and I think it should be regulated, there should be an age limit, although I think it should be closer to around 19, then why isn't marijuana legal? Maybe with the same conditions. Throw an age limit on it. I don't think people should be smoking anything, including tobacco. I personally think it's retarded. That's my personal stance. I think burning anything and putting it in your lungs is definitely harmful for your lungs. And I will tell you guys, because a lot of you people, I've been talking about the wars and everything else on these shows, and this is not a single issue for me, but it tends to be a lot of these people who are obsessed with legalizing marijuana, that's like their only issue. If you want people to listen to you, if you want to legitimize yourself, do something other than that. Because it seems like, maybe it's not the case, but it seems like that's the only thing you care about because it personally affects you. It's not a greater principle about suffering of others or anything. You just want to smoke pot. That's all. And that's why it discredits it a little. Also, all these exaggerations about it, that also hurts you. And also, don't go with the argument, oh, it's natural, thus it's good. There are lots of natural things that are not good. If you don't believe me, go eat a handful of sand right now. It's natural. Trust me. You won't like it when it comes out the other end. Okay, that's not a good argument. Here is a better argument. Grown adults have the right to their own body, and if they want to smoke marijuana recreationally, there are no victimless crimes. If they commit a crime while, using marijuana, like, I don't know, driving a car into a wall or something, then it should be treated the same way alcohol is. You know, lots of millions and tens of millions, maybe billions of people drink every day, and they're not all getting in car wrecks and fist fights. That happens because of the abuse of the substance. But there are plenty of people drinking responsibly. They are overwhelmingly the majority who are drinking responsibly. And I would say the overwhelming majority of people smoking marijuana do so responsibly. Or at least not to the point where they're committing any crimes. And those who are committing crimes probably would have done that anyway sober and had been better at it. Because there's nothing within the high that motivates somebody like that. It's actually quite the opposite. It demotivates people. That's the general take anyway. But I think it's case by case because I know individuals that get all hyper when they're high. I see other people who just veg out into a beanbag like they're melting into the floor. I've seen all range of things. But what I have not seen, and I grew up I've lived in several different cities and countries, so I've got a nice taste, you know, it's not just my local area or something. But I'll tell you what I haven't seen. I haven't seen people smoking pot and then getting all belligerent and getting in a fight. Or robbing a store or whatever. It's nothing to go to jail for. It is absolutely crazy, but they know there are so many people, especially young people, teens, they're self-medicating for other things, and that's a whole other issue. And it's just a constant source of revenue for the prison system. And they only go downhill from that point. Once someone's in jail for something as silly as drugs, if you've been in prison for a while, they don't focus on rehabilitating people. They don't focus on getting you better. People get worse. It takes a strong-willed individual to come out of prison and seriously recuperate and start over. It happens, but that's because of, you know, the will of that person. The system is not helping them. The system is detrimental to them. It's just a mind-blowing thing to me. Kid smoking a joint, gets thrown in jail, a grown man murdering Palestinians,
gets applause. They want to ban fake fighting and fake shooting in video games. People like Hillary Clinton have supported things like this. She's the one that pushed for the ban on Grand Theft Auto 2 or 3 or whatever it is. And yet, when it comes to actual fighting, when it comes to bombing Libyans, when it comes to killing Iraqis or Afghanis, that's no problem. Actual shootings, murder, and violence, well, that makes people in her field money, so that's okay. But watching a fake fight or act of violence on a video game, well, that's the bane of society. Let's just go back to blaming everything on rock and roll while we're at it, which they kind of did to gothic music there for a little while. That was the trendy punching bag. It's not video games. It's not music. It's not the radio. It isn't any of that. Our problems in society go much, much deeper than that. One is the indoctrination system we call education. Another is the inundation of actual violence all around us. We have subdivisions that look like they're jails. People have bars on their windows. The cops aren't out there stopping actual crimes. They're out there giving traffic tickets, picking on little kids, shooting sleeping girls, and arresting people for drugs. Selectively, I may add. But I can tell you the petty thief that stole somebody's bike or even robbed someone's wallet just can't compare to Wall Street. But you know, there is a principled, philosophical man rising through the ranks to put an end to all this craziness with the war on drugs, the imperial escapades, the foreign aid, the out-of-control police abuse and security abuses, the policing of the world, the bases populating all over different countries. Someone that put a stop to all of that and return us to sound money, and return us to peace and liberty. And that is Ron Paul. And with me on the next show, possibly, is going to be Scott Horton from Anti-War Radio, another voice of reason, who has consistently debunked the myths of the neocons, the claims from the War Party, and has been doing so for many years, a hardworking individual. And together, we're going to have a show about Ron Paul preaching the principles of liberty, talking about the philosophy behind libertarianism, and perhaps having a little fun poking holes at some of the so-called competition. The only thing Paul is really competing with here is the mass media. Can he get enough attention and a voice in the press, or are they going to demonize him again? Because when it comes to the debates, when it comes to actual issues, Paul cleans their clocks. Americans do not like the financial theft of Wall Street. Americans do not like the TSA. And the majority of Americans are opposed to all of these wars and policing the world. Nobody wants any of those things, and Ron Paul can reverse all of those negative things. No one who understands the Federal Reserve likes the Federal Reserve. Ron Paul, 2012. He's not perfect, but compared to the imperialist corporate shills we have now, from Obama to the rest of the teocons, we need a true patriot constitutionalist American that will stand up for your interest, first, second, and third. I also had word from Ken O'Keefe. We were going to do a show again today. I tried to pick on Israel enough for the both of us for a little bit there. Our schedules, I'm very busy. There's a huge time difference as well. But Ken O'Keefe, citizen of the world, political activist, very concerned with justice, not just preaching, but through action. That's why I like the guy. I'm going to try and have him on in the future. We will be doing a show together, no worries. I wanted to point out that two of the standing ovations, if you really count, he had 58, because there were two standing ovations when a heckler, it was a Jewish-American woman from Code Pink, I believe, screamed out, "Stop Israeli war crimes." She was tackled not by the police, but by AIPAC staff, and beaten and sent to the hospital. But Netanyahu got up there, being the liar that he is, and said, oh, you should take it as a badge of honor that people can do things like that. They can't do that in Tehran or Tripoli. This is a real democracy, and everybody stood up and cheered. But of course, you can't do that in the U.S. She was beaten and sent to the hospital for stating the fact. Stop Israeli war crimes. It is a war crime to ethnically cleanse native population. This happened earlier in the year for even less than that. Ray McGovern simply stood up and turned around, turned his back to Hillary Clinton as she was making a speech about spreading free speech to Libya. And he didn't say anything, he didn't do anything. All he did was simply stand up and turn around. And he was tackled by her private goons and handcuffed extremely tightly. And he also had wounds. I don't know if he went to the hospital or not. Maybe he did, I can't remember. But I do remember seeing the welts all over his arms. This guy's in his 70s and quietly turned his back to Queen Bee and got pummeled by thugs. We don't have free speech in our country. Since the days of George Bush to now, they have what they call free speech zones, where they say, oh, you can protest, but you have to do it over here in this fenced-in area away from everybody. That's unconstitutional. You can't have free speech zones. The free speech zone is all of America. We have free speech. We're supposed to, constitutionally. This concept of free speech zones, or just having the police or even AIPAC staff gang up on people. You know, when you have a heckler, you can take them outside, you can arrest them. There's no reason to beat on a 28-year-old woman. Especially to the point of, she had to get treated for neck and shoulder injuries in the hospital. It's a girl, okay? There's no reason to do that. And our Congress stood up and clapped. Oh, they thought it was, they booed her when she was saying her comment as well. But they all got up on their feet and clapped as she was beaten and arrested. And then Netanyahu made his little snide remarks about Iran. Iran isn't ethnically cleansing anybody. Iran doesn't build Persian-only cities. Iran doesn't shoot kids with rubber bullets that are actually steel bullets coated in rubber. They're not ethnically occupying anyone. They haven't been in a war since the Iraq-Iran war, which was instigated by the U.S. and Israel, who sold arms to both sides. Israel, on the other hand, has attacked all of its neighbors, often using false flags as the pretext, has been caught spying on the United States a multitude of times, and the only groups actually arrested on 9/11, caught in vans packed with bombs, were the Israelis, who are working with the Mossad, Israeli intelligence. And yet, recently, they actually had the audacity to accuse Iran of being part of 9/11. You can't make this stuff up. You can't be any more brazen or brash than to just say, oh, well, we've lied about everything. How can we go even further in the hole? This No Sama stuff was bad enough. And I say, oh, I know. Let's say Iran was part of 9/11. It worked really well with Iraq. That's the lie they said with Iraq. They said Iraqis met in Prague and gave anthrax to Atta. Totally false. Hell, there wasn't even a meeting in Prague for them to meet Atta. And Atta didn't have any anthrax, and neither did Iraq. But somehow the Israelis witnessed this. And James Woolsey and Fred Barnes and Gary Schmidt all reported it. And it got parroted by Paul Wolfowitz and Richard Perle and the normal neocon cabal. And we went to war. And we're still there. We are still there. What is it going to take, people? I do want to give an important announcement. The Mike Rivero Show from RBN is moving to the Jeff Rentz radio program. And you can catch him there Monday through Friday, I believe. Mike Rivero got an Anti-Neocons Award in 2007. Last year, it was to Helen Thomas. And this year, I don't know, it looks like Ron Paul might get it so far. It's only May, though, so quite a ways to go. But you should listen to the What Really Happened show and go visit whatreallyhappened.com. You can also listen to Rents on Rents Radio on Rents.com. I ignore some of the things about ghosts and stuff they used to have, but, you know, that's all. They know that that's just bunk. People have to make money. And I totally understand that because
I've been near those positions before where, you know, I needed revenue. I haven't done any sensationalizing, but I can understand, you know, whatever it takes to finance what you need to stay on the air, to get the message out. Because us in the truth community, we're not Julian Assange. We're not getting all these hundreds of thousands of dollars from people. We're not Jonestown. We're not living in near million-dollar homes. We're just regular men and women doing this often in our spare time for nothing, monetarily anyway. I'm not making any money, I can tell you that. I don't get paid to do the show. I didn't ask for it either. This is a collaborative effort to get the truth out. And we need an alternative media. And one day, I'm quite sure, we are going to build a larger, legit, well-financed alternative media. It's going to happen. And the internet is the method for it. You know, newspapers readings are going down because they always lie to you. Viewership of the ABC and NBC, CBS and Fox is going down because they always lie to you. This is the future. We're building here, and we really appreciate your support. And I don't care if that's to Rivera, to Rince, to myself, to Liberty News Radio, to RVM, to GCN. I don't care. I'm not in competition with anybody like this. It's you, the listeners, that allow us to continue to do these things. By listening to the commercials, by clicking on ads, by purchasing things, by just giving encouragement, sending donations, just spreading videos and radio interviews and articles around so that more people can see them and read them. That's what we need, and we all need to work together on this. And I don't like this infighting or pecking at, you know, I don't care. I support all the, anybody that consider, who actually tells the truth. Now, I don't like the kook movement, and I certainly don't like the mass media. But even in the mass media, when there's a nugget of truth and somebody says something that's right, I don't say, well, that was on, you know, this station, so I'm not going to mention it. When they say something good, I'll report it, and I'll praise it. And when they say something stupid, or when they lie, I will tell you. That's my two cents. Thanks for being with me again today. Sorry, out of time. We'll have a good guest next week.